Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about another good reason to exercise is burning bone fat, a key to better bone health, University of North Carolina. Then we're going to explore a nutrient that allows us to slow down the aging process, quercetin. And then thinking about happy memories can shut down your body's stress response, Rutgers University. And a study's linking healthy brain aging to the omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids in the blood, University of Illinois, and a lot more on health and healing. Also today, I have one of our Conversations with Remarkable Minds guests. You've not heard him before, Dr. Nathan Schwartz-Salent. And we're going to talk about the order-disorder paradox, how the breakdown of our orderly institutions and beliefs are giving rise to something new, and a look at the narcissistic character of Trump and American society and its leaders and journalists and so many people, including on the left as well as the right. By the way, Dr. Salent is a psychoanalyst for more than 50 years, specializing in transformative views and theories of Carl Jung. He has a doctorate in applied mathematics at the University of California at Berkeley and received his psychoanalytic training at the C.G. Jung Institute in Zurich, Switzerland. So he's one of the world's foremost. We're talking about the top of the pecking order and what he does. So it'll be a very interesting discussion. I'm allowing more time for that. Also today, I was taking some time last night to see how all the different media cover the news stories of the day. And the left and right are still covering the war in Syria as if it were a civil war. It was caused by the tyrant Assad, that regime change is necessary, that there's consensus throughout the United States, certainly in the media as well as in Congress, this man must go and must be replaced by people representing the moderate terrorist. And Americans, I don't believe, have a full or complete understanding of the history of Syria. And that there is no civil war, has not been a civil war in Syria. Assad is not the problem, but America is. So today, for the first time, I'm going to share with you a comprehensive, accurate, scholarly timeline of what has gone on in Syria, and the United States and its allies intervening in Syria, going clear back. And I want to thank Dana Vesali in Global Research for being the only group out there who has the scholarship to help in the research on this. So you, once you hear what I have to say, I'm pretty sure that you'll understand that we've been lied to so that we can engage in regime change. Also today, from John Whitehead, America's Reign of Terror, a nation reaps what it sows. And also, wasn't it interesting how the media is now challenging Trump on the associations he's making, and yet they haven't said a word about his association with Saudi Arabia. They should. We will. Because how can you, on the one hand, condemn any president for associating with dictators, at the other hand, say as long as that dictator happens to be giving $100 to $300 billion in arms deal, will overlook all the crimes against humanity, all their support of terrorists. So that's why a lot of people don't know the truth. So today you have the truth on that. I don't know if we'll have time to get to our audio file, but I have some good ones if we do. So we always like to start with things that empower people. And what empowers us is we can all get healthy, live a longer life if we make right choices. Exercise is crucial, and I'm talking about, listen carefully, the older you get, meaning over the age of 40, the more exercise you should actually be doing, not less. We've done it just the opposite. In fact, I remember that I only had one uncle who exercised. He was a coach. And he would run up and down. He was a referee. He'd run up and down the basketball court. That helped him. Now, he smoked and he drank and he didn't have a good diet. But at least he did that seasonally. But no one else where I grew up, outside of maybe softball league in the summer, ever exercised. They didn't bike. They didn't run. They didn't jog. They didn't swim. So little wonder that without exercise, they lost about 9 valuable years to their life. Here's the latest from the University of North Carolina. It's a fat-burning concept, meaning that in bone health, a lot of people, and this was from University of North Carolina School of Medicine, showed that exercising burns the fat found within the bone marrow, and that offers evidence that this process improves bone quality, and the amount of bone improvement is just in a matter of weeks. This was studied and then published in the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research. And what it shows is this: as people get overweight, and we're a nation of overweight people, we often have worse bone quality because of being overweight. And so therefore, when we exercise, we are becoming leaner. Quote, one of the main clinical implications of this research is that exercise is not just good, but amazing for bone health, says the lead author, which is Dr. Steiner, MD, on this. And this impacts, quote, in just a very short period of time, we saw the running was building bone significantly. So, as you exercise, you build new bone, which is stronger, healthier, and therefore you're not engaged in bone degradation, which is associated with diabetes, arthritis, and a lot of problems. So exercise and have healthier bones. And also you're burning all that excess fat. Rutgers University did a study. You've just had a fight with your partner or a confrontation with a colleague. Now your heart's racing, your pulse is up, your blood pressure's increased. You're struggling to think straight. What should you do? Psychologists are not short on ideas for how to calm yourself down after a stressful experience. Seek out a friend. Yes, there's good evidence that that can help. But what if there's no friend to talk to? You could try to alter your view of what just happened from disaster to not really so bad. But it can be difficult to engage in this kind of cognitive reappraisal. When you're in the immediate aftermath of a stressful event, perhaps because acute stress compromises the neural circuitry that's involved in emotional regulation, your brain needs help if it's to quickly regain control. And according to a new study published in Nature Human Behavior, you can provide it by thinking back over good times. What do we do when we get anxious and when we've had an argument? Almost always we do the same thing. I don't care where you are, or who you're with. You want to defend that you were right, they were wrong, no matter what. They deserved whatever intemperance and energy you shared with them, and you're still not done with it. You got to let this happen a couple more times in your brain. All bad. Because that's creating an epigenetic profile that you're a victim, and the response to being victimized in that way is rage, anger, verbal assault, argument. All that does in every human being on the planet, it raises your blood pressure, raises your cortisol levels, raises your chance for microstroke and heart attack. None of it's good. But what we should do is this. Stop for a moment. Okay? Just breathe deeply for about 3 or 4 minutes. Just deep, deep diaphragmatic breathing, as deep as you can breathe, slowly. And then think of something positive, something that you can laugh about, something that gives you joy, something that if you have a dog or cat, pet them, hug them, look them in the eyes. They're there for you. They never betray you. They never leave you. They're always there. If it's a good friend, just value the friendship. Value the fact that someone has been there for you, willing to be there for you. Find something that'll make you laugh. Get close to nature, just to go for a walk. For those of us who live in New York City, we had the advantage of a couple really nice parks, Riverside Park on the west side, overlooking the Hudson River that goes clear from the George Washington Bridge, clear down to Wall Street, and then back up the east side. And we have Central Park. And two great places just to walk. Sometimes when I do a really intense commentary or one of the conversations with the Remarkable Minds, or maybe a progressive commentary hour, I want to release that energy now. I want to rebalance. So I'll just walk over to Central Park and just do a walk around the park. That's what you need to do. So instead of hanging on to the negative, drop it. Just drop it. Get out of that mindset and go to remembrance and reminisce about positive or at least neutral experiences. A good study from the University of Illinois, in fact, there were two studies that showed that the polyunsaturated fatty acids in the blood improves the integrity of your brain structure and your cognitive abilities. And we know that those decline after the age of about 40. So, the omega-3s, one more reason to make sure you have them every day. In fact, I believe we should be having them twice a day, but if you had them once a day, that would still be good. Why? Because the brain is a collection of interconnected parts, each of which ages at its own pace. Some brain structures and the abilities they promote start to deteriorate before others. And that's important. So if we take something that helps the white matter structure of the fornix, that's a group of nerve fibers at the center of the brain that's important for memory, good. So the omega-3 fatty acids help stabilize that. And previous studies have shown that the fornix, that's F-O-R-N-I-X, is one of the first brain regions to be compromised in Alzheimer's disease. And that's why when I'm helping people with brain conditions, you'll see glycerol, phosphorol, choline is one of the nutrients I suggest, and phosphatidylserine. Those are very important for that particular part of the brain. But the omega-3 fatty acids, especially the DHA and the EPA, and they can come from either vegan sources or fish sources, are extremely beneficial for your brain. And so make sure if you want a good brain, healthy brain, better cognition, take your omega-3 fatty acids. And also from another study, and this one's from Ulster University in the United Kingdom, folate, which is folic acid, and other B complex slows down the decline in brain function. And it also slows down depression. And these findings are very important. So the B complex family is extremely efficacious when it comes to the omega-3 fatty acids, the polyphenols, and the B vitamins, folic acid, and B12 in particular. So right now we have almost 47 million people living with advanced dementia worldwide. And that's going to increase tremendously. In fact, everyone listening right now, every single person, sooner or later, you're going to be faced with memory loss. And what do? If you're taking this advice now, then there's no reason that you should be impacted as others would. And I'm asked this question a lot. What's the difference between taking meat and getting iron? And that was one of the things we were told for decades. You needed iron, so you got it in meat, or getting it from, let's say, plants. Well, iron is an essential mineral, and your body requires just the right amount at all times. And there's a common misconception that iron is only obtainable by eating meat, and that iron deficiency is more prevalent among vegans and vegetarians. That's not true. Natural plant-based iron supplements and food can provide the iron your body needs, and you don't ever have to have anything from meat, and therefore you don't have overload or iron toxicity by eating too much meat. So, if you're having kale, especially your greens, but also beets, are very good, and you're getting all the health benefits, and that will help prevent normal iron levels, prevent fatigue and chills and brain fog and iron deficiency anemia. So get your iron. Iron also, once it's saturated into the cells, and by the way, heme, iron from animal sources has been linked to heart disease, stroke, and colon cancer. But you don't have the vegan form showing that problem. So get your iron from plants and seaweed. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, back in New York, and short order, I've completed my documentaries, and we have one running. In fact, we have two running all over the world. I don't know how we did, but we were one of the featured documentaries with Plant Codes at the, it wasn't the Venice Film Festival. I think it was the Milan. Anyhow, there was a big film festival that we were in last weekend, so I haven't gotten word how we did. But we're on a rip with Plant Codes. We've won more awards for best documentary than any other documentary that I know of in the world this year. This coming Sunday, 7 o'clock, very important, there's going to be a film that you have not seen on aging. Following that, I'll be doing a live webinar, and I don't know how long it'll take. It could take 2 hours. I have a lot of information to give you. And this is stuff that you're not aware of. How to slow down and reverse the aging, your muscles. It'll be particularly important for women going through menopause, to reverse menopause. For men who are losing muscle mass and human growth hormone. For people suffering or someone they know suffering from dementia, memory loss, Alzheimer's. To rejuvenate your skin. To regrow hair. All the things that happen that we lose as we age, we can reverse. I'm going to show you how to do that. Now, we were filled up, but I just got word this morning. That's why you haven't heard me mention it the last couple of days. Glenn said he got room for 200 more people. Not many, but at least 200. So go to GaryNall.com, and you'll see where you can sign up for Sunday night, this coming Sunday night, 7 o'clock. Webinar on preventing and reversing the aging process naturally. I'm sure that you have heard of the attacks against Donald Trump for his cozying up to dictators. So this is from Adam Johnson from FAIR.org. He says, quote, after a series of friendly gestures by President Donald Trump towards Filipino president and Egypt's president, over the past few months, U.S. media have recoiled with disgust at the open and embrace of governments that ostensibly had hitherto been beyond the pale. Quote, enabling Egypt's president an enemy of human rights, was the New York Times editorial position, followed by, quote, Donald Trump embraces another despot. And a week later, Senator John McCain said, quote, why we must support human rights and how Trump makes dictators stronger, was the Washington Post. Okay. Well, fair enough. And we should not be embracing dictators. But what about up to a $300 billion, largest in history, weapons sale to Saudi Arabia? And not a word. So Adam Johnson went out to see. Did anyone say anything? Well, thus far, the Los Angeles Times, CNN, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, and CBS haven't reported on Trump's massive arms deal with Saudi Arabia, much less had a pundit or editorial board condemn it. Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen has killed at least 10,000 civilians, resulting in near-famine conditions for 7 million people, and led to a deadly cholera epidemic, all made possible with U.S. weapons and logistical support. John McCain, whose New York Times op-ed was unequivocally shared by dozens of high-status pundits, aggressively backs Saudi Arabia's brutal bombing of Yemen and has called for increased military support to the absolute monarchy. The New York Times hasn't written an editorial about Saudi Arabia since October of last year, when for the second time in the span of a week, the paper defended the regime against potential lawsuits over its role in the 9/11 attacks. When the Times does speak out on the topic of Saudi Arabia, it does so to run interference for its possible connections to international terrorism. Nice words to the wrong dictators unleash a torrent of outrage from our pundit class. Nice words to the right dictators, along with billions of military hardware, which, unlike nice words, will be used to continue to slaughter residents of neighboring countries. Okay, that's what had to be said. I want to go a little further. Quite simply, Saudi Arabia is the world's top funder and exporter of Islamic terrorism, extreme terrorism, and among the royal family, they are the Kardashians of Wahhabism. Prince Nayef, cocaine drug running drugs since 1998, was busted a bunch of times and released. And the execution of Princess Misha, daughter of a conservative brother of the king, for having a lover when she was 19. The imprisonment of King Abdullah's wife, Princess Anan, and her four daughters after divorcing them. Members of the royal family have assassinated each other. And in 1975, when King Faisal was assassinated by his nephew, plenty of investigative reports showing Saudi Arabia aiding ISIS. That's not in dispute. In fact, they're the number one financiers, the number one enablers, the number one defenders of ISIS, but of all major terrorists in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia. And we know it. WikiLeaks released it. It was a matter of record. Even Hillary Clinton and John Podesta discussed this in an email that was released from Podesta's files on WikiLeaks. The invasion of Yemen. They used cluster bombs and depleted uranium bombs purchased from the U.S. and the United Kingdom. Cluster bombs are an international war crime. So where's the outrage? Where's the condemnation? Where's the special FBI investigation or the Senate or the House investigation that the United States is engaged in weapons of mass destruction as we speak today? It supports al-Qaeda in Yemen. It's funding radical factions of Islamic Brotherhood. Otherwise, the Brotherhood opposes monarchies. It supports Israel to repress Palestinians. It was absolutely the funding principle behind the hijackers in 9/11. Now, how could we be so outraged as a country, and rightly so, that we were attacked and nearly 3,000 Americans, innocent of any of the crimes, were destroyed? And yet the people who were behind it, we have not condemned, we have not held accountable. though we have finally got the evidence showing that they were a part of it, and now Congress has finally allowed the government to be sued. And so there are lawsuits, but the media has been protecting Saudi Arabia. They have manipulated nonstop oil prices. They are chronic liars about their oil reserves. They had a role in helping remove Hugo Chavez from Venezuela when he was the chair of OPEC. They manipulated the Vienna Convention back in 1964. No Saudi diplomat or family member can be arrested or detained for any crime while posted in another country. An example, a top Saudi diplomat in India kidnapped two maids, beat and starved them, then gang raped them with other Saudis for 15 straight days. Never touched. Not a single person was held accountable. In fact, Saudi, a diplomat in the United Kingdom, raped an 11-year-old and was released. On human rights, they're the world's number one executioner, right behind ISIS. They throw gays off buildings, and if you shouldn't die when being thrown off a building, then you're beheaded. They have public crucifixions, and they don't hide it. They'll do this anywhere. And Ali al-Nimr is on crucifixion row for 3 years after taking part in an anti-government demonstration when he was 17. They actually crucify him on a cross. It's horrible. There's no freedom of speech in Saudi Arabia. There's no freedom of religious beliefs. There's no other religion allowed in Saudi Arabia, not Christianity. No. Nope. Not allowed. They have systematic discrimination of women. Women are treated no better than an animal in Saudi Arabia. They're ranked 127th out of 136 countries on gender inequality and human rights, violations against women. And in fact, any woman who competed in the recent Olympics was termed a prostitute. It's a culture of routine arbitrary arrests in prison throughout the country. And the latest agreement was a woman was raped by some men, yanked off a street. She was sent to prison, I believe it was for 3 years, and given 200 lashes. The men, nothing. So, here's my question. Why is it the American media has not found fit to condemn Saudi Arabia for all of its crimes and everything that it is engaged in? It's a question I believe deserves to be answered. So, yes, if you're going to continue this whole attack against one group of dictators in the world, then why not challenge the lack of humanity in all dictators? And why not take a look at our own crimes against humanity that we should be held accountable for in the larger worldview? And we are not doing that, and we should. Now, mind you, each person can have their own perspective, but I believe in if you're going to criticize one person for a crime against humanity, then open yourself up to looking at all sides of it. I just do not see how in the world anyone in the media, especially the John McCains, who should have long time ago retired, are supporting terrorists as he has done. And there is no such thing as moderate terrorists. And they do not promote peace through diplomacy and detente. And at the same time that they're doing all this, they're saying that they're really bad terrorists. Yes, and Saudi Arabia is the country that is sponsoring them, funding them. Why are we still doing business with Saudi Arabia? We should boycott Saudi Arabia. We should treat Saudi Arabia the same way that we treat any other country, and yet we don't. And also, I read this morning an editorial by Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept, and I don't have it with me now. In fact, wait, I just pulled it up on my computer. Let me just read what he has to say. I think it's extremely important. Then we'll go to our guest. And Glenn Greenwald is one of the finest, most objective investigative journalists in the world. And he is concerned about siding with the deep state against Trump. And that's exactly what is happening. He says, quote, it's extremely dangerous. This is from K.G. McClurth. As bad as the Trump administration is, things could get much worse should agencies such as the CIA and the National Security Agency seize power of the U.S. government. Yet many Trump resistors, seeing the escalating war between the administration and the deep state agencies, are siding with the latter, and prominent journalist Glenn Greenwald warns that, quote, it is extremely dangerous to do that. Greenwald's warning comes in the wake of a similar alarm sounded by former Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who recently published an article in Newsweek. In that piece, he outlined how intelligence agencies in the military-industrial complex have been actively working to undermine the executive branch of government. Now, as these intelligence agencies go on the attack, the deeply unpopular and dangerous Trump administration, against the administration, many in the resistance are calling on them to overthrow Trump, if for no other reason than to stop him from enacting his extremist policies. This would be tantamount to destroying democracy in order to save it. And as I pointed out last week, intelligence agencies and their allies in the military-industrial complex are run by those who have been never appointed, those who are appointed but never elected, and therefore they have no accountability to anyone. Even if you're among those who believe, with good reason, that the deep state and the Trump administration are equally dangerous, Greenwald correctly points out that there is a difference. Quote from Glenn Greenwald. Donald Trump was democratically elected and is subject to democratic controls, as these courts just demonstrated and as the media is showing, as citizens are proving. But on the other hand, the CIA was elected by nobody. They're barely subject to democratic controls at all. He adds, quote, the urge that the CIA and the intelligence community empower itself to undermine the elected branches of government is insanity. So this brings up a possibility. Was this the CIA's agenda all along? Is it possible that it wasn't the Russians who manipulated the election in favor of Trump, but rather intelligence agencies? Did certain people in the CIA realize that a Trump administration would be a disaster and therefore more easily overthrown? Consider how the FBI suddenly and conveniently discovered more Hillary Clinton emails containing classified information just prior to the election, releasing them just before the election. Also consider how allegations of Russian interference in U.S. elections started coming out just as Trump announced his intention to seek greater cooperation with Moscow, and how there has never been any irrefutable proof of these allegations. So something to think about. So before you all get on the bandwagon that anyone is better than Trump and get rid of Trump, who benefits from getting rid of Trump at this moment and his administration? And what does it say about the people leaking all the information and are behind this? Do we actually have a coup going on, a silent coup, and people are not aware of it? Just something to think about. We are continuing with our Conversations with a Remarkable Mind series. The topic, Order-Disorder Paradox, how the breakdown of our orderly institutions and beliefs are giving rise to something new, and a look at the narcissistic character of Trump, and before him Obama, and American society. My guest is Dr. Nathan Schwartz-Salent, a psychoanalyst who has been in clinical practice for 5 decades, specializing in the transformative views and theories of Carl Jung. I gave you his background at the beginning of the program, and we're going to go now to, I believe he is in New Jersey, to say hello to him. He is also the author of some very important works. His earlier work in 1982 was Narcissism and Character Transformation, The Psychology of Narcissistic Character Disorders, and it remains an important classic to understanding this common disorder. He has also written extensively on world mythology, alchemy, and the psychodynamics of relationships and other themes. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you.
I believe anyone walking on the planet with open eyes will agree that our current times are chaotic. All of our institutions that our Western civilization has placed such faith in are either being seriously questioned or in the midst of collapse. Capitalism has failed to reach its goals and promises except for the few, and democracy is biting its own tail and giving rise to horrendous extremism. And more people suffer stress and mental disturbances. I see all the time in my own practice a hyperactivity in people, as if there's a hyper-psychic agitation, not just in children with ADHD, but in adults as well. Our entire modern society is hyperactive, and everything we believe would bring peace and order to life is now fragile and broken. And this goes to the heart of your thesis about the relationship between order and disorder, not simply from the viewpoint of scientific physics, but from psychological and social and even spiritual perspective. So I'd like you to begin, please, by explaining to us how your quest for order, or our quest for order, gives a sense of security, simultaneously creates the seeds of disorder that is often leading to our own undoing. And if you would, please give us some examples that reveal this paradox and how people may confront or experience it in everyday life. The forum is yours.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the forum. I'm actually speaking to you from Blue Hill, Maine, not New Jersey, which is a wonderful place I now live. I wanted to start out by saying that in this book I've just published called The Order-Disorder Paradox, I go through a discussion of how that relation was discovered. It had two strands to it. One strand was my previous work as a scientist, and the other strand came from a transcendent vision of light, both of which converged in work I then did at the C.G. Jung Institute for my training, having left the sciences. Took a long time to get these two strands together because they speak from other dimensions of reality. But I think it's also pertinent to our times that we now live in. What it comes down to, and I won't go through all the details and of the derivation because it can get a little complex, but what it comes down to is that every time order is created, disorder is also created. That's not a new idea. It's an ancient idea. You find it in the mythologies of the world. You find it in Plato, where he talked about necessity, that every order creates a disorder. But it's not something that's been embraced in the modern world as it should be. I showed how it follows from laws of science and thermodynamics, and how it's mirrored in the mythology and the clinical world I, as a therapist, deal with. But the order-disorder paradox is ubiquitous in everyday life. The problem lies in recognizing it. Every time we create order, or a new orientation emerges from our unconscious, or a dream, or an intuition, the disorder that appears in us takes the form of anxiety, fears, reactive anger, hypervigilance, fears of envy, withdrawal tendencies. Now, within all these reactions, it's very hard to remember that a creation of disorder preceded that disorder. But this memory, the knowing that some order did happen before it, has the capacity to contain the disorder and help us look for its meaning. Just a few examples. Have you ever thought long and hard about a problem until you reached a solution that satisfied you, only to be depressed the next day? No confidence in your decision, as though the time you'd spent thinking was wasted. Maybe you've achieved something important at another time, only to feel much worse than before your triumph. after an article you may have written was published, you felt suddenly vulnerable, hypersensitive to, and even fearful of the opinions of others, even though the article was wildly praised. If you are an artist, have you ever had a breakthrough in your work, only to grow despondent soon after? Have you ever talked about a project in a way that engaged people, and then found later when you tried to work you were so anxious and scatterbrained you couldn't? Have you ever been drawn to another person and thrilled to find they seemed to like you as well? There was that special spark, erotic and emotional and intellectual. Yet at your next meeting, you felt inexplicably dull together, as though there had never been a connection between you at all. Or you find yourself operating in a manic, hyper-vigilant way, which if you looked in yourself, it would be to suppress some anxiety. Generally speaking, the creation of order results in disorder, and that is necessary. It is not simply something that we observe, find it in stories, see it at times. It's necessary. And because it's necessary, we can use this principle to reflect on our present time, our times now that are signified, for example, by the Trump phenomenon. I want to emphasize that when we talk about a phenomena such as Trump, we're talking about a reality, a psychic reality, an outer reality, an inner reality. It's affecting all of us. And it's extremely important to realize that such realities aren't just understood causally. They're not simply understandable as something that led up to it. We also have to realize they are purposeful. What could possibly be the purpose of all this disorder, as was so beautifully talked about in the introduction to my talk here? What could possibly be the possible goal of it? Now, let me just back up a little bit and go back into my consulting room. It's a little hazardous to go from a consulting room and that cave that an analyst lives in into the larger world, but I think it's useful and works here. And I want to tell you about a case I had, in fact, the first case in my entire life. When, as a young student analyst in Switzerland back in 1964, I had a woman who came to me, a young girl, 19-year-old girl, and as we worked together, she was getting deeper and deeper into herself and had certain experiences that showed she was doing quite well. There were dreams that showed that a child was being born and was increasing in its maturity. All very, very good signs, but at the same time, she was having very difficult experiences with her mother. They had an actual physical fight together. And when she returned to therapy, this girl started to have hallucinations. And she started to hallucinate an eagle on her head, eating her head. Now, when she was with me, this eagle was present, eating her head. When she left the therapy, it seemed to calm down and not be a problem. That was a good sign in a way, but of course it made me wonder what in the world was going on. And then I realized and came to remember that spiritual experience that changed my life that I alluded to, in which there was an enormous vision of light, what the mystics call the Unio Mystica. And that vision was followed by enormous chaos. Now, this was before I had even conceptualized the order-disorder paradox in those early days of my training. But I did remember that, and what I did is I felt into her process, and I began to experience that chaos she was having of that eagle, and in a way circulated it into the light I knew, and created a circuit between the two. so that the eagle was there and I could begin to feel it had a spiritual background, even though it was creating this enormous chaos in her life. I saw this woman for 3 times a day for 2 weeks. I was getting a little worried. The eagle wasn't going away, but then finally she had a dream. She had a marvelous dream that a caterpillar was crawling up her arm, and out of it a butterfly emerged. And soon after that, the eagle started to go smaller, started to become an actual partner, something she could begin to feel internally as a spiritual orientation. Out of this chaos that I know many an analyst would have run for antipsychotic medication to calm down, but out of this horrendous chaos came a fundamentally new spiritual order in this woman. Now, later I could certainly realize, and I've included this case in my book, The Order-Disorder Paradox, I could realize that indeed this was a remarkable example of the order-disorder paradox. Now, while I have just given you a bunch of examples in everyday life of when you experience order, and then disorder comes up, and you've got to not let that order get wiped out by containing it with your knowledge, you know, of what had occurred, and see it in conjunction with the disorder. Here, the order, it was a new order appearing in the depths of her unconscious, hinted at by her positive dreams before, that's important, but a new order hinted at. But what came out first was chaos. Jung once commented that when God appears in the human psyche, he puts his left foot forward. The Trump phenomena can be seen in this way, as the left foot of God. What's its purpose? What's emerging in our culture today? Why do we have to be so vigilant against quick fixes and other forms of order, like deep state ideas that could come up and take its place? We have to understand the meaning, possibly, of this kind of order that Trump represented to millions of people and still does represent to them, because that will give us a hint of what we're heading for, possibly. Remember, when there's a creation, like in a creation myth, in many, many mythologies, the first creation that comes up is a mess, and it has to be gone over. And the creator makes mistakes. He gets it wrong. In the Aztec creation, it takes 40 times before he gets it right. You know, in the Bible, we know what happened with the flood. You see that in Mesopotamian mythology. Everywhere, the creations come up, and they're not perfect. Okay. But we still have to understand what's in the seeds of the creation that was represented by Donald Trump, which appears to be filled with great deals of difficulties and trouble now. But still, what's its purpose? What was going on? The chaos we're living in now. What's the order deep within the psyche that's trying to emerge? And I say to you, just thinking that way is useful. Rather than railing against Trump, railing against what he's doing, having meetings, getting together with people, politically attacking him, a place for that. But try to realize that, hey, maybe it's just the left foot of a new spiritual order trying to emerge in this culture. Maybe it's a spiritual order that can't fit into the old boxes of conservatism or liberalism. Maybe it's something essentially new that we have to be on the lookout for and in a certain sense have faith in. That faith is the kind of faith, you know, that Kierkegaard talked about. We talked about a leap to faith. You know, it's not a leap of faith, but not even having the faith, but a leap to it. But the order-disorder paradox will tell you, hey, something deep is going on here, and be very careful about getting false forms of quick order to fix it. look at Trump to give you an idea of what this new order might have to do with. Look what he represented to millions of people. Trump was not a real object, so to speak. He was not a person that had good sides and bad sides. He was not somebody who you would look at all the things he did, that the news just went over and over and over again, that and one pundit after another felt was surely to be his downfall, but yet wasn't. Why can that be? What kind of an object was he to people? In a documentary that Michael Moore is now doing at Cannes, he's written one called Fahrenheit 11/9, and he writes as a trailer to it. He says, "No matter what is revealed, Trump remains standing. Facts, reality, brains cannot defeat him. Even when he commits a self-inflicted wound, he gets up the next morning and keeps going and tweeting." What does that mean? Why is that? How can that be? That's the nature of what we call clinically a narcissistic object, not a real object, but what we call a self object. I know those are terms, you're not familiar with them, it may seem complex, but here's the upshot of it. In the human being, there is a center we call the self. It's a center, an organizing center, and it's actually linked in mysterious ways to a transcendent level. One can say a level of a self with a small s and a large s. That level of the self in a person, one of the ways it evolves is it projects onto people. It projects itself onto adults in the environment. And those adults don't become real, but they are what are called self-objects. They carry the brilliance, the wonder, the majesty, the creativity of that part of, say, the child or adult or later adult. They carry that out there, and the person tries to merge with that and get some of it back within himself. That's the process by which this mysterious thing, the self, comes into incarnate reality in a life. Trump was a self-object for millions and millions of people whose identity was destroyed, was shambled by the crooked works of Wall Street and the breakdown of our political institutions. Institutions that at one time themselves served as self-object for people, but let these millions of people down. And when one loses the sense of self, one loses identity. The core of identity comes from this center. And so what happened was Trump filled this for people. He represented someone who couldn't care less about the existing order. He managed to pull off being a self-object. So every negative thing said about him didn't stick. He was pure Teflon. He was a self-object and still is for many, many millions of people. What does that mean? That tells us that in the chaos that's we experience, what's trying to emerge is a new image of the self. Believe it or not, it's a spiritual reality this culture faces. It is a reality of the spirit, not of practical, not of life, not of good structures and new organizations. That all belongs to. But there is a new spiritual reality trying to emerge. You see it emerging all over the world in chaotic, destructive forms, if it's in ISIS or, God help us, if it's in Trump. You see the negative qualities of it, but yet it's what the chaos is trying to birth. And that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with nothing less than an attempt at a birth of a new order, and we have to get our attention on that process. Not that we know what the order is, but we know that there's a mystery to these times. If you look in ancient times, you'd say we're living in the time of the Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. But it's out of these times that something fundamentally new can emerge. Everybody, I urge to consider the disorder in your lives. Consider how it's connected to an order. Consider how there's a mystery in the chaos, in the symptoms, in the confusion that you feel. Consider that there's something in you working, trying to appear through that kind of chaotic time.
Nathan, we're just about out of time. I really appreciate your insights. That's why I didn't interrupt you. And I could certainly give a historical example. Look at Italy when it was in chaos in the 1920s. Or,
yes.
And Germany in the 1930s, where in the early 30s, people wanted order. And
right.
because there had been disorder, but then the order they got gave them disorder. And
right.
and also look at some of the writings of, for example, was it not in Othello, Shakespeare said, reputation is an idle and most false imposition, often got without merit and often lost without deserving. And it reminds me of George Santayana, who said, every real object must cease to be what it seemed, and none could ever be what the whole soul desired. So I believe that what we're seeing in Trump and the people who needed to see something in Trump as an object, they don't care if he's a human being, but as an object, they first saw and wanted to see in Obama. The difference was that Obama did not give them the type of narcissistic and a gradating personality that Trump did, and it still created the same type of order and then disorder, because the hope and change, well, there was hope, but there was no change. And therefore, what he was to be in many people, the coming to a higher spiritual realization and ethical and humanitarian values be shared across all lines of society, all ethnicity and all colors, it didn't happen. But right now, there is a movement underway of people looking for alternative ways of living that are more healthy and natural, and yet seem to turn their backs on the chaos of modern social structures that are being created. So I believe that something involving our own personal human psychic energy is coalescing and harmonizing with that which does not need an object, an Obama, a Clinton, or a Trump, in order for us to be liberated to engage our own powers. And I want to thank you very much for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Nathan Schwartz-Salent, author of one of the most important books ever written on the subject of order disorder. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Daylight come and me one go home.